Good day, good day, good day. I want to welcome you to Holistic Life Podcast, where we are talking about all things holistic life, holistic living, and we are super duper excited to be here today. I have a special guest with me who I cannot wait to bring to the stage and just to jump into this dialogue and a conversation. Who is going to be joining us today, our special guest. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about her background. She has extensive experience as a mental health therapist and an excellent, impressive academic background in psychology and theology. So Dr. Tawana Wade is here to share some of her invaluable insights on inner healing, overcoming trauma, and transforming our lives through spirituality and understanding. And so if you are one who is interested in learning more about personal growth, the effects, we're going to be talking about compassion fatigue, and, you know, just some other things, this episode is for you. And so I want you to get ready to welcome to our stage on today. Welcome to the house, Dr. Tawana Wade. Let's bring her up to the stage. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a blessing to be here. Just want to say thank you so much. It's an honor to be here and to just talk and share my passion.
Yes, yes. My passion. Yes, you were one of the ones that I definitely thought, you know, when I was looking for some guest interviews, you were definitely one that I was considering, you know, just as I, in the short amount of time that I have known you, just in following your journey and knowing just some of the things that you have been doing in this particular area. So let's jump right into the conversation on today. I want you to first just start off by telling us a bit about your journey into the fields of psychology and theology, and then how these disciplines are intersecting in your work.
My journey is actually interesting because I had no interest in psychology when I was an undergrad initially. I was a pre-med major, matter of fact. And so studying, I was so adamant about becoming a medical doctor. However, I had an interaction. So I had two professors. I had one male, one female, both African-American. One taught me my very first course. I did not like it. Mm-hmm. And so I had to repeat it because I thought it was boring. And so when I transferred to another school, the African-American female, she taught psychology. And she explained the intro part, Freud and things, very, very differently. And it caught my attention. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that if I could take the back door, so a lot of us in the field of medicine, they know there's the back door into, at the time, into medical school. You didn't have to major in necessarily all the sciences. So I thought if I can change and go into psychology, it would be better. I think it sparked my interest even more when I attended a Christian university, by the way, that did not believe in the power of the Holy Spirit or the works of and the gifts of the Spirit, but God was still in the midst. So while I was studying, in my intro courses, a lot of times I've heard in churches and ministers preach against psychology. And so I was trying in there struggling, trying to keep my open mind. And God just began to reveal to me where he was in even the theories. It's even with Freud, Sigmund Freud. And it was like, wow, really? And I think that started my journey. And so I began to see God move and God in psychology. Some people say it sounds heretic. It sounds heretical, but it's not. It actually, he's in everything. Yes. And so that led me to when I suffered an injury in 2000, I began to look other ways and say, I'm not going to go this path of pre-med. So I decided to change and go into psychology because I graduated with my undergrad in psychology. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, let me go into counseling. But in order to get into counseling, I had to sign up and, you know, and look for courses and University. So what happened was I actually applied to Oral Roberts University. But they tried to, and they did say through the first one, which is theology, and then, you know, add the counseling. And that's how I end up into that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So very, very interesting. God tricked me into seminary because I was like, oh, I just go and study about God, you know, learn more about God, you know. And so when I got there, they were saying seminary. I was like, no, this is not seminary. This says theological, you know. Theological. And they were like, dude, what do you think seminary is? And I went, no way, God tricked me. So he really built that information back because it was preached so much. I've heard preached against, you know, attending seminary. So that's how I kind of got into both. It sounds a little bit by accident, but God knew.
Yes, he does. He has a plan for us. You know, he'll have us doing stuff and, you know, it's just like, oh, this is what we're doing? Okay. You know, so we just go with it and roll with it. I want to ask you about your research on compassion fatigue among mental health counselors. This is both impactful in what you have done. So can you explain what compassion fatigue is and why it's particularly relevant to those who are working with traumatized individuals?
Great question. Compassion fatigue is complex in a sense, but yet it can be simplified. So the simplest way to say it and to describe it is when a helper is helping and assisting, using compassion, of course, because that's what we do, no matter whether we're, you know, a minister, we're a nurse, a doctor, firefighter, police, it doesn't matter. I look at those as frontline workers. So it's usually frontline workers that are helpers, especially educators as well. And so they're helping. And when they help with the compassion. That's what comes from them. Not just empathy, but that compassion. So they're compelled, and so they want to help someone out of a situation and better their situation. And so that's what compassion fatigue, that's what compassion is that can lead to compassion fatigue, because when you're using and functioning in compassion like that, that sometimes you come across individuals that have had traumatizing experiences. And so for you to sit there day in and day out, work with individuals and hear stories. And sometimes in with mental health counselors, we hear people's stories over and over again. And so there's a component that is what we call secondary traumatic stress that the counselor, the mental health counselor, or the person, the helper can experience as well. And so all of that is combined with burnout, but then what we call secondary vicarious trauma, which means that you necessarily, when you're helping, you didn't experience that firsthand, but it feels like that you're experiencing it as you hear the stories over and over again. So as a result, people become more what we call hypervigilant. They experience more anxiety. They may tend to isolate when they're done with work. Sometimes people visualize, they depersonalize. They have these visualizations, you know, of that person's actual, but they think it's theirs and it's not. So it's a carryover as well. And then also too, cynicism. I think that's how I came into it and knowledge about it, because I became cynical as a therapist. My whole attitude was when I heard sometimes the stories working with children and their mothers and listening to the mothers, and most of these children were abandoned by the mothers or in foster care or something to that degree. And my attitude was, yeah, you know, kind of heard it. You know, everyone has a story, you know. And so being cynical like that, and I had a conversation with my supervisor, and because I got convicted. Mm-hmm. And I was like, because it wasn't right. And she said, oh, compassion fatigue. That's what it sounds like you're experiencing. I said, compassion who? And so she was explaining it to me. And for me, I'm going, that's just weird or wicked. You know, it just sounds like, how can you use something that's so precious to help someone and then turn around and it's like a double-edged sword, it can cut you. And so she told me, she said, research about it. And that's what led me into doing more research and the research with mental health counselors regarding compassion fatigue. That was my very first research project on that. Yeah, that topic.
That's interesting. And as you are sharing on that, a thought came to my mind when it comes to, and I know that like pastoral counseling is different, but have you seen or any experience of knowing even like pastors experiencing this, but not really able to identify that this is
definitely. Almost definitely. And I want to add too, I forgot to add that there's a piece of burnout. And so we tend to think of burnout just physical, but there's that emotional burnout that's connected to all of that. I think it was about, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago, that was an elder in the church that I was attending. And he was really going through with his wife. His wife was sick and she's in a nursing home. And he was just kind of, just pray for me. He's really challenged. And I was just led to share with him a journal article that I had wrote. And it was called, it's regarding compassion fatigue. And he read that and he was like, oh my God, this is what I've been experiencing and didn't know what it was. Because what I found out is that emotional burnout would feel like the physical burnout. And so a lot of times in Christendom, people would deny it. People will deny it. It's like, oh no, I'm not burnout. It could be that emotional burnout and not necessarily, which leads to physical burnout if you don't catch it, if you don't deal with it. And so a lot of times they are in denial. And it's like, oh no, there's nothing wrong with me. And then I've heard people preach, you cannot be burnout. You can be emotionally burnout, especially if you're hearing, because you're human. You're hearing other people's traumatic stories. Yes. And so I've come across pastors that ministers that physically I can discern it. God would just show me as well through discernment. You can literally kind of see it because the physical, their physical appearance. And then you can hear sometimes in their voice, or they may say something and it's cynical and I'm going, oh, there it is. It comes across when they're teaching or comes across when they're preaching or just interacting in a conversation. It's like, there it is. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times they're in denial. Wow. And not really, because I believe that they don't understand, because there's a part of us that says that if something is wrong with me, then that means that I'm not, that's a belief system, that I'm not really, doing or fulfilling what God has called me to do. And that's not necessarily true. What it is that you're human and that sometimes we need to take a break and we need to take care of self. And I know that there's this whole theory out here or a belief system that you die for the sake of the gospel. But I think it's misconstrued because in the past, when we look at our biblical leaders, the apostles and the prophets, they died, they physically died, but they were able to, I believe, self-care. And it's all in scripture and God has shown me that. And so I think that's what God has given me part of, that's my passion. That's why I'm adamant about it, is to really bring awareness that it's okay if you're struggling because you're human, but at the same time, don't deny it.
Yes.
Don't deny it.
Yeah, that's so very true. And that's why, it's so important for us to have these conversations, because I believe that, like you said, it just boils down to a lack of understanding. And that was one of the things that I know in my experience in growing up, just going through, like you said, just life, as we say now, life be lifing, right? Life is lifing right now. And in leaders, it becomes very important for them to understand that when people have to take those breaks, that it does not mean that they don't have faith or trust in God. No, we are still, I'm not going to get off into a tangent, but that's really one of the passions that I have, is about us really understanding that we are spirit, we are soul, and we are body. And that just because we are spirit beings having a physical experience in this world through this physical body that we have, does not mean that we neglect that doing that self-care. And so I'm glad to hear that you are, really taking advocacy in this area and continuing to educate those that are in, you know, the body of Christ and, you know, the places where God has called you to have these conversations. So I'm grateful to hear that. Grateful to hear that. So in your experience, what are some of the effective strategies? So we've talked about, we've identified the problem when it comes to compassion fatigue. What are some of those effective strategies for mental health professionals to manage the compassion fatigue while they're maintaining their high level of empathy and care for their clients?
Great question. In my first research project with that, I learned a valuable lesson. You have to be honest. Mm-hmm. Many of the mental health professionals that I actually researched, that they were part of my sample population. I was in groups with them training, and they were complaining and talking about, you know, how tired they was and never having enough time, and physically they were tired. And so I thought this would be a great, you know, sample. And I was surprised that when I saw the results and how they answered about self-care, mm-hmm. it was almost like what we call they fake good. Mm. And to give off that everything was okay, but that's not what we were having in conversations, you know. And so one of the key things I say, and I believe that people, whether it's a mental health counselor, whether it's an individual that's seeking professional care or seeking professional therapy, counseling, biblical counseling, doesn't matter. Be honest mm-hmm. with yourself. Yes. You have to be honest with yourself where you are, accept where you are. That's where the work began. You have to accept it. You know, mm-hmm. accept that there is an issue. Accept yeah. that what I call you're leaking out. Mm. Accept the fact that you're leaking out. It's okay that you leak out because, like you just said, I'm going to say apostle so bad. But like you just said, this is a natural body. So, you know, we're mind, body, soul, and spirit. This is a natural body. And so it needs breaks. The mind needs breaks. Mm-hmm. You know, emotionally, we may need breaks. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay. It's okay. And this is what I sometimes tell people, whether you're in ministry, you know, whether you're in the medical field, whether you're in the education field, doesn't matter. So what, you have a big S on your chest, you know, as we said, that's super on your natural, but mm-hmm. that's it. That's super on the natural. And so right. we have to take care of that natural piece. So being honest, accepting, and then get ready for the work, put the work in. Mm-hmm. I also believe too, that, and I've heard this, many that enter into mental health, they actually doing it because they want to help someone because of what has happened to them. And a lot of times it's unresolved issues. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, do the work. It's unresolved issues. And for some, not all, but for some that I have talked to, it's self-esteem issues. And so you work on self, yeah. you know, work on self. I think that that's so important. It sounds basic, but I think that's so important. And what I've found with my recent research, which is my dissertation, with spiritual leaders, with compassion fatigue, is that if you have a higher power, you're connected to God, don't disconnect mm-hmm. because you feel like you're not measuring up. In whose eyes? Mm-hmm. You know, whose eyes? Because God is not condemning you. And, you know, who said that you're not measuring up? It could be that you're measuring up and above, and he didn't require that. And so don't disconnect from your higher power. Don't disconnect from him, because the research has shown, and I know we're going to go into it a little bit later yeah. if we have time. But I have found out that prayer and meditation are keys to yes. to what I call, they are keys to holding back, experiencing the burnout, and that leads to the compassion fatigue. They are, it's a buffer. They serve, that's what I said, their research-wise, as a researcher, it serves as a buffer. So prayer and meditation serves as a buffer. when we're talking about compassion fatigue, I looked at spirituality, and that was key, because spirituality is more about relationship, connecting to mm-hmm. your higher power and others, realizing that there's something greater than you, someone greater than you, your purpose is greater. You can't complete it on your own. You know, you need that assistant, but recognizing that and then connecting, staying connected. I think that is very, very key. A lot of times when people are going through, they tend to isolate or shut down, or they mm-hmm. have this persona. They want to give off this persona that I have it all together and I'm great. And that's not what is required, because you may be great right now, and it's 2024, but what about 2026, 2028? I hate to do this.
Yes, yes.
Oh, you know, but 2030, because 2030 is coming.
It's coming.
You know, but we're talking about on the, you know, on the continuum, the long run, what, mm-hmm. where will you be? How healthy will you be emotionally or mentally? You could be physically looking great, but emotionally and mentally, excuse me for saying, you know, you jacked up.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you're jacked up and you're helping people. And what I found out that when you don't do this as a mental health therapist, and because I've done this, that I'm scraping, as one person told me, that they kind of saw visually me kind of at the bottom of my barrel. I have given out so that I was scraping to still try to mm-hmm. give out, but I had none for me. Mm-hmm. And I was, and I literally experienced, it wasn't compassion fatigue, but I, in 1990, I believe it was five or six or something like seven, six or seven, I experienced burnout because mm-hmm. of school. And then I was working in the, you know, in the church. So yes. So I would say though, you know, those coupled with some other things, but I think that those are key, not just for mental health, but also for spiritual leaders as well.
Absolutely. You know, God has really circled me back around to biblical meditation. You know, I always pray. But there has been, what I've noticed is that there has been such a shift in my prayer time because of what I'm experiencing during my times of meditation. And it's life changing. And I like when you said that prayer and meditation are like buffers. And what is the one thing that most people struggle with? They struggle with praying. They struggle with meditation, you know? And so being able to recognize that, and then something else you said about God didn't require that. We are often putting a lot of weight and pressure on ourselves. And God is like, but I'm not even requiring that of you, you know? And so again, oh, this is just so, this is so good. I love those strategies that you have shared with us on today. I want to shift into talking about a team that you worked on when you were analyzing data for research on international trauma. What were some of the key findings from your studies in Haiti, India, Sudan, and the West Bank? And how have those experiences, what was the compare and contrast that you saw, you know, just here in the United States?
It's been a while. And so I know that the data probably has changed. But mm-hmm. when I was completing my clinical psychology degree, we actually was part of a research team, and we actually took the data because there was a psychologist that actually went over there to the country. So we sat down and we talked with him, and I really, really connected with him, Dr. Rhodes. And he actually explained to me the difference in what he saw in a lot of these countries. It was at the Christian University, so he was able to talk to me freely. Mm-hmm. But one of the key things that he said, that the trauma that a lot of these in these countries, they were either natural from disasters like Haiti and the earthquake. So that was part of that research the data that we collected. Mm-hmm. And then there was the West Bank and Sudan, which is man-made, because of war. And so the trauma mm-hmm. Was a result of man-made, which was the war, the inner war, the civil war, whatever. And then there was the Haiti, And then there was India. India was a little bit different because India was based on the caste system. And so I didn't really know that they had a caste system like that, but many that were on the low part of the caste system reported having experienced verbal and also sexual abuse and, and traumatic experiences. And one of the things that we actually found out through the collecting the data is that many times people depersonalize, so they just kind of disconnect themselves. And that's a buff, that's a protective factor that people kind of do for them to continue on in life, but not necessarily, it's not healthy. It's not really, it's not healthy at all. And so that's something that we found. What the one that really stuck out for me was the West Bank. And I'm just going to share it, but I'm not sharing it to be political.
Right. What
we found out was from the West Bank was that that Gaza Strip was very, very controversial. A lot of people just look at it, you know, Palestinian Israelis. But when I did the research continued to do the research to present and help with my team, I found out that there were Palestinian Christians in that strip.
Gotcha.
And they did, and they didn't belong, and they were the ones that he captured a lot of that data, because they didn't belong. They didn't belong with Israel. They didn't belong to the Palestinians rejected them because they believe in God. And so there was a lot of this. And so they reported experiencing a lot of trauma because of that war at the time. That was civil war before it's blown up now. And so we're talking about the rejection, you know, which is traumatic, you know, the neglect, the abandonment, and which is what, when you look at these countries, the individuals did actually experience, because they lost loved ones. So you had the grief and loss, all of that connected. And then that felt like there was neglect and abandonment when it comes to, you know, the government. And so they were reporting all of this. And that's what we found out that was very, very interesting. You know, with that is that it looks different from here in, you know, in the U.S. because we've up until, I would say, the last 5 or 6 years, we haven't seen a lot of the level of trauma, the international trauma that, and you know, these countries have. But at the same time, we have our own. And so it looks a little bit different. But at the same time, when I look at it now, I look at trauma as trauma.
Yeah.
You know, trauma is trauma. Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. That trauma is trauma, that there really is no difference, because people are people. Humans are humans. You know, we're not different species.
I would say how it occurs is different.
And yes, how
we react to it, because most of the time we don't respond, but how we react to it, and how we react to it is based on our culture and our ethnicity and what we taught. So it's based on our worldview as well. And so the Western worldview of dealing with things is different from the Eastern worldview.
So very true.
Yeah.
So very true. And I can definitely see that. When you, do you think that, do you think, or maybe I can ask the question this way, from our Western world, our Western culture, do you feel that we, in what ways do we handle it differently? Is it talked about as much or accepted as much in other cultures than it is here in our Western culture? If that makes sense.
It does. And that's a great question. I would say that it has evolved in the last 5 years or so. Prior to that, it wasn't. It's still sometimes considered in many cultures a taboo. There's still a struggle, but I am seeing more people majoring in psychology and mental health from, you know, that are from African ethnicity, you know, backgrounds, descent, Asian, and so it's becoming more of an acceptance to it. But the way that we actually approach it is different, because here in the Western, we're more individualistic, you know. Let's just be honest, we're in the, they're collectivists, and so because they're collective, it's about community. And so because if you do something, or you know, and basically in many other countries, you do something, it shames not only the family but the community that you come from. And so they're very close, you know, most of the time they're very close and it's more collective. Here we're more individualistic. And so we teach that and so we function from that. And so our approach is like that. So, one of the areas I think that really caught my attention while I was studying was family, family mm-hmm. therapy. How does that dynamic work? You know, how does it connect to the community? How does it connect to, you know, work? And so I think that led me to studying the industrial organization psychology, because like I said, we leak out. And so we mm-hmm. touch everything, you know, it's not just about us, but we touch everyone. We touch everyone that we're connected to, whether it's professional or personal. And so I think changing our mindset about it here in this, you know, in the Western versus the Eastern, I think will help us to approach it even not just from a national level, but from a global level.
That's good. I know just in my personal, circle that we do find that healing is better done in community. At least those are the things that we've kind of experienced. So creating those safe spaces, you know, for people to come in and to have their journey of healing. I know that that's what I do in a lot of instances. And we see that it is very, very effective model that we are following. And so I just wanted to know about that. I think that especially with the integration of so many different cultures here, you know, in the United States, that it becomes important for us to have that understanding. As well. Let's see. So I know that you talk about a lot of the work that you do has to deal with a lot of inner healing and restoration. So share just some of your insights, your experiences, just on how an individual would start their journey towards healing from traumatic experiences.
One of the therapeutic models that I think is so key, and I'll just use it because I'm using this, is the acceptance commitment therapy, ACT. It has an acronym, ACT. And for me, I see it across the board is that, first of all, accepting. So being honest with, going back to what I said earlier, being honest with yourself and accepting what has happened. A lot of times when people are on that, they want to start their journey, but it's hard for them to accept what has happened to them, the traumatic mm-hmm. experience. And if you have compact trauma, mm-hmm. so we didn't even talk about that, but if you have compact trauma, which means multiple trauma, and I want to define a little bit better trauma, because sometimes we think trauma is just, physical or sexual abuse or even verbal abuse, but people that experience multiple losses, mm-hmm. you know, that's traumatic. A breakup could be traumatic. It depends on that person. You know, a divorce is traumatic, yes. You know, because it's a disruption of a person's norm. You know, it's a disruption of what we call their homeostasis. You know, yes. you know their value, you know, where they were balanced at, and it disrupts. And it disrupts to the degree where how they were functioning, they're no longer functioning. They're functioning and maybe and most likely the maladaptive form. And when they do so, it's traumatic. It's traumatic. Mm-hmm. And so there's all of these, the residual, I call the residual effects of that trauma. And so when you have compact trauma upon trauma, a lot of times people are like, where do I start? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you start where the one that keeps coming up.
Yes, yes.
You know, so the one that keeps coming up, you know, recognizing your triggers, you know, that's the one that keeps coming up. I don't want to deal with it. Well, right now that, you know, your body is even telling you, your brain is telling you, we need yes. to deal with this. So it's like, listen to your body, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's one, that's the start. And then for me, I found it very helpful when people have a connection to a higher power, they connect with God. That mm-hmm. is, that I found as a therapist has been very helpful versus those that don't. Why would I say that? Because those that don't, it takes them the journey longer, and mm-hmm. it can be very, very challenging, because they're not incorporating those spiritual disciplines like prayer and the meditation or even the reading the Bible. And so I said that is also key. And connecting with people, finding, like you mentioned, the safe place, the safe people to share. You don't share everything.
Right.
All right. Time, you know, and so I found out, and you know, that we as humans, sometimes we need to learn about discretion.
Yeah.
You know, but you share when you are able to, or when you feel compelled to or led to, but you share in degrees. Mm-hmm. And I think that when that occurs, it opens up, you know, a person's to on that journey for them to continue to dig deeper. Because a lot of times when people start on that journey, I believe, or inner healing, they actually have this, what I call the surface. They really go deep. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can't see the blind spot. Sometimes you can't see all of your triggers. So you need a professional, one mm-hmm. that has been trained in the area, that can say, okay, why are you acting this way? Or, you know, call you on it. So holding you responsible and accountable. Mm-hmm. I think that those are key as well. I want to say that my experience has been professionally working with individuals with inner healing. I have seen tremendous work. God, when God is involved, I've had people that said that I've seen several therapists and been in, you know, therapy for 4 or 5 years, and he did it in one session.
Yes, yes.
He did it in one session because we invited him in, and we invited mm-hmm. him, you know, we invited him in and into that space and mm-hmm. allowed him to just come in, and whatever that they needed from him at that moment, he was there, you know, and they received that. And so that was their journey of inner healing and freeing them. And so I hope I answered the question, but
yes,
it starts that way from mm-hmm. what I've seen in a professional manner. It starts that way, and then it leads and it progresses. But this is what I tell everyone. Healing is painful.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Healing is painful. Why would you say that? When you break your body, when you break a bone, when you're injured, you know, there's an initial shock, you know,
yes.
the body. But then when you go through that process of healing, just physically, mm-hmm. physiologically, it's painful. So
yes,
can you imagine emotional and mental? Mm-hmm. It's painful, but it's doable, and it does occur, and healing is on the other side. But that's what they call the road to recovery. That's
yes.
what they mean, because it is a road. It's a journey. A lot mm-hmm. of people jump off, you know, they jump off at the first stop or the second stop. But right mm-hmm. when they're getting to the depth of it, to deal with that, I'll say sometimes it's a gross level of pain that mm-hmm. a lot of people just, you know, they abandon. They jump off the train, or they abandon the ship. It's like, I'm not going to go that deep, or I'm not going to go through this. I'm tired, or whatever. It's too much work. But mm-hmm. I can tell you from even personal experience, it's worth it.
It is. It most certainly is. And I had, an inner healing session, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago. And just like, it's like you said, just like that, this may have been maybe the second or the third session. And it was like, Holy Spirit revealed to me, okay, this is the scripture. Okay, this is what I want you to say. And literally, I could see her countenance change. The countenance of the person change. And literally, it was just like, ooh, okay, like within like 15, 20 minutes. And I said, well, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else? Because I think that the assignment has been completed for today.
That is, you know, it's so powerful. I had, I remember when I was doing my internship, I had a lady, and I was like, what did I do? And my supervisor said, you didn't do anything, you did well. And I was like, oh my gosh. But she was having problems with a narcissist, her boss, and, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, gaslighting her and everything. And she was like, you know, came in, she was so beaten. And then on top of that, she had her mom who was beyond helicopter mom, but this one was in her 40s. And so she was dealing with both on the end. And so God would give me scriptures, you know, we were talking, kind of give me a scripture. And I was like, she would throw scriptures at me, which I love, because, you know, I went to seminary. So I was like, let's open up the word and see if this is actually
true. Yes, yes.
You know, what does the word really say? You know, did God really say that? And so I would point things out to her, and it was empowering. And then she began to, she became assertive for herself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And after three sessions, she called and said she wasn't coming anymore. She said, I don't need you anymore. And I went, what? And I was like, sure, you need some more work, you know? And it was very, very interesting. And my supervisor was like, well, it's like you actually, you know, cut yourself out of a job. He said, but that's a good thing when they say they don't need you anymore. You know, they feel, he said, she got what she needed.
Yes.
What she came for. And I was like, but she could do, he said, even though she can use more work, that's what she needed. And he said, she stood up to her mom. She laid her boundaries, which she had never done before. And she didn't fall into, you know, the manipulation with her mom and things of that nature. With her boss, she got the guts to leave. But before then, she stood up to him and she got the guts to leave, and he had to leave her job. And so just like I said, in one session, what a person has struggled with, when God is involved, you know, it's freeing, and it can be just one session. Sometimes it can be two sessions, but he can do the work that that they've struggled with for 15, 20 years, or even 5 or 10 years or whatever, or seeing multiple therapists. He can do it in one session.
Yes, absolutely. And I absolutely love when that happens, you know, when you see just God just work and his word work. It is so amazing.
Yes.
When you look at the transference of negative behaviors in the workplace, let's talk about that. How have you seen unresolved personal issues impact our professional environments? And what would be some ways that you would suggest that people would address that?
I've seen it because of working with individuals. Most of us come from dysfunctional environments. And so if this dysfunctionalism is not addressed, then we take it into the workplace. Mm-hmm. When people lack boundaries, or they're what we call boundary breakers, they take it into the workplace. And so everything that we're working on, or we function in, we take it into the workplace. So those behaviors go into the workplace. We just don't cut them off. We just don't dismiss them or from us, but we actually function in them. And so you have people that are in the workplace, they have disregard for authority, they lack boundaries. That's what I'm seeing. So if they grew up in a dysfunctional family, then that was one of the things, they lack authority, they have disrespect for authority. It filters into the workplace. If people have traumatic experiences, it filters into the workplace, because you just don't know what their triggers are. They may not even be aware of their triggers are. And so it could be something that someone said, a smell or something that could trigger them. And then next thing you know, the PTSD is manifesting. And so so all of that is coming, cultivates into the workplace. And so we're not even aware of how we're what we're experiencing or how we're carrying on. A lot of times we tend to look at it, they're doing something to me, when actuality, when I get people before me, I'm like, what are you actually doing as well? So you're telling me what's going on, but what are you actually doing? How are you reacting or responding? Most of the time we react. And so because of that, it actually creates more of a toxic environment. So you're dealing with a toxic environment, and then it creates more toxicity, and so, which is stressful. And so what happens is it affects productivity. And so the person actually goes to work, but yet they're not productive. And so they're not productive based on their job description. So then when they get wrote up or some kind of discipline occurs, then they said, well, they're after me. No, that's not it. You have a job description. Are you meeting that requirement? If you are, then that's good. But if you're not, then that reflects on you. And so a lot of times, if you're late to work all the time, you get wrote up. That is a disciplinary action, right? And so it carries over from life. If you're late for, you know, appointments or whatever, or you're late to meetings because you feel like that you can, and then it spills over into work, there's a disciplinary action. And so it's not so much that they're after you, but see, that's the mindset.
Yes.
Get on the defense. So that's where all of that comes into play, because that mindset has to be dealt with and challenged, and that view, the worldview, has to be tweaked or challenged and reshaped so that it is more healthy. And when it's healthy, they can produce a healthier lifestyle versus this dysfunctionalism that you're actually living in. And so that's what I have experienced. That's just this, you know, the tip of the iceberg, but that's mm-hmm. what I have seen and what I have experienced. And people take their hurts and chew. And so you may have a manager that lacks emotional intelligence, or a supervisor that lacks a level of emotional intelligence that you need from them. And so they're all they're concerned about, because then again, they're in leadership, but then it could be toxic as well. And so all they're concerned about is meeting those requirements. And so they're on you about meeting those requirements, and you could have just lost a loved one. And they're not sensitive. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, so how can you advocate for yourself? Maybe you're in an environment that you can't. But my thing is that you don't get mad. You recognize that they can't give you what you need, but you find an environment that can. But at the same time, you work and you do what the job is requiring you to do, regardless mm-hmm. of whether you like it or not. If you don't like the job, you work toward getting out of that. But at the same mm-hmm. time, it's what God has given you for provision. And so you meet those requirements, you meet those that job description. If you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, find out if it's more than what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Work smarter, not harder.
Yes.
You know, find those strategy, pray and ask God for a strategy how to do this.
Yes.
You know,
so yes.
You can, less, you know, feel less stress. And so I just wanted, you know, to kind of share that. So I hope that answers, you know, the question.
Yes. It really does. And I think that this is I don't know if it's something that just needs to be even just a part of. I used to work in HR, and so I could see how a lot of these, what do I want to call them? How a lot of these strategies would be so beneficial. I mean, I know that most organizations and corporations and things like that have EAP programs or whatever, but I think that there's something different that needs to take place in the leadership development. You know, when I do leadership development, if I'm doing professional development training, I make sure to always incorporate that in that piece into there, because it is so integral for having that understanding of how to not only just deal with other people, but how to deal with ourselves as leaders, and to know that sometimes you are the problem, not always the other person. Sometimes we can be the ones that are our own problem.
Well said, you know? Well said. It goes back to the accountability.
Yes.
Someone holding you accountable, and it's like, wait a minute now, you know, because you're telling them their story. If you're in a safe environment, you're telling them the story, and they can actually call you on it. You know, and say, wait a minute, you're the way that you respond. But that's how I always do. Mind you that each generation is different.
Yes.
Gen Zers are different from millennials, and Gen mm-hmm. X is very similar to the boomers, because, you know, we come, you know.
Yes.
You know, and so our values may be different, just slightly different. And so I work with a lot of Gen Zers as I teach. And I'm finding mm-hmm. out that the way that they respond to things because of technology is totally different from even the early millennials and then the Gen mm-hmm. Xers. And so because of that, your approach, you may have to adapt and change your approach. Some people's like, no, that's just how I am. I'm old school. I'm old school.
Yeah.
I'm old school. I am very, very old school. But I have mm-hmm. had to adapt a lot my approach.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that I devalue what I do know. Does it mean that I devalue my approach? No, it just means I had to tweak it based on that population and how they how they either respond or react. So I prefer for them to respond versus react, because reactive is out of the emotion, and most likely you're going to get a toxic emotion or whatever.
Yeah.
But when they respond, there's a thought process that occurs. You know, and that leads to most likely a positive behavior, you know, or mm-hmm. or self-reflection or some kind of reflection. And so mm-hmm. that's something that I've noticed. And so you're right. We need to, sometimes we are the problem, but we don't mm-hmm. want to really admit it, especially when in leadership.
Yes, yes. And I know that that's been my experience. This is leading me to another question on that when it comes to intergenerational relationships. What would you say to maybe a boomer leader who may be presented with an individual that may be a Gen X or a Gen Y or a millennial? What would you say to them to get them to understand that everything is not just always linear when it comes to these types of instances and circumstances that can, you know, that can come up? What would you say, or not, I don't want to just single them out, but what would you say, how should we approach this in our intergenerational relationships, and especially in the workplace, where you have different generations working together, and it just seems like there's like a lack of understanding when it comes to working with individuals and just the interpersonal relationships?
I would say the first thing is humility and listening, active listening, having humility, being humble, active listening. Listen, I've had encounters with my students, and I just shared this example. One of the things that I, years ago, this was during the pandemic, I said, help me to help you all, because I help me to understand this thing when it comes to Gen Zers. And I was taken back by some of the remarks, because I was in the classroom at the time, not online. But one thing that they said is several things. Well, I think one, it was about two or three that really resonated with me. One said, you have to give respect to give respect. And I was like, whoa, because see, Gen X boomers, you know, we were taught different. And I said, that's interesting. So having these dialogues and these conversations can provide understanding. So that's why I say active listening. And I said, that's interesting. I said, because we were raised that you actually give it and then you receive it, not the other way around. You know, you expect people to give it to you and then you give it back. And so I had millennials raise their hand and they were sharing. They was like, yeah, that's how I was trained. And so they shared with the Gen Zers and it was an eye opener. And then I had some that told me, online, because I asked online as well, and they said they had bad experiences with educators in high school and things of that nature. And so when in a workplace, you don't know what the experience was with the leader, like an educator, which is a leader in high school, you know. And so a lot of times you're getting what I call that residual effect, or that the transference, you're getting that. And so understanding where they come from or some part of their background can provide you with information to approach them differently or better. But lack of communication, for me, I've always said, even professionally, even personally, is key. Lack of communication is key to the dysfunction. Lack of communication is key to what I call these emotional cutoffs. And then, you know, I don't want to talk to you. You know, you just do what I say and all of that. There's no communication. There's no relationship. You have to have active listening, humility, and you have to communicate. So a lot of times having effective communication is key as well. What I found out with boomers is that because of how they were taught with their parents, it's a disconnect when it comes to the Gen Zers. And it's like just sitting down and the Gen Zers like, oh, they're old, you know, but they're not. But look, Zier, hey, they said 40 years old, and I was like, what? They were like 40 years old, you know, 50 years old. They're like, but you don't look at them. I'm like, what does that mean? You know,
it's right.
Living in 10 years, you're right around the corner.
Exactly.
But their mindset is, you're old, you don't know much. That is a lie. I want to say that it's not true. What has happened is they dismissed because of technology. Because of technology, technology is at their fingertips. And so they figured that they can get everything from, you know, the technology and everything. So you don't know what you're talking about, because a lot of times we want to give these stories. And so I'm at the point now where you use stories when it's relevant, but don't always kind of give out, you know, and talk with all of these stories because they're not there. Right. They want you to kind of show them. So understanding how that population works, how they interact, they're more of a tech, so they're more visual, not audio. Right. They're audio to a degree, but they're visual. So they're visual first, and then most likely they're audio second. Whereas with us, with some of the boomers was like, show me, you know, you had to, you know, because it was hands-on based mm-hmm. on the training, right? And then yes. the Gen X kind of got a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So understanding the millennials, they just, you know, like picking up. They're grabbing from here to technology because they were in that, you know, at the beginning of that whole age when it burst open. And then they have a lot of the old school. And so some of them do. And so just understanding, I think, how each generation interacts and what they like and what they don't like is a start to have those conversations to bridge the gaps.
Yes, that's so good. And I believe that we do have to continue to create those environments so that we can continue to bridge the gaps, because there is still a gap that we are seeing and experiencing. And again, you know, the humility, active listening, effective communication, and, you know, even the technology piece, not being afraid of technology or having an understanding of technology and how they are using it, you know, to get some of these understandings, these thought processes that they have. And so that is so, 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 so good. I want to just ask you one last question, and this would be for any of our listeners. We've had such a great conversation here, but for any of our listeners who may be experiencing some compassion fatigue, what advice would you give them for how to begin to address it?
Being honest with yourself, where you are at, seeking understanding of it. Don't freak out, mm-hmm. But don't ignore it. Being right. honest with yourself, that's where you start. Does it devalue who you are? No. It just says that you're human, and understanding that and accepting that. And then seeking, if you need professional help, seek professional help, because you might need to talk to a professional counselor, therapist, psychotherapist, biblical counselor. You might need that, because it could be that you have some unresolved issues yourself. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. you're pouring out and helping others, but yet what you're hearing with their traumatic experience is triggering your trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, it's triggering your trauma. And so I would say start there. Those are some of the steps that you can take. Again, do not disconnect from your higher power. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's God, don't disconnect from him. Matter of fact, it's best that I found out that you're truthful and honest with him. Mm-hmm. Because when you're truthful and honest with him, he'll show you where this needs to be tweaked, and what, you know, what areas where you're leaking out, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And in that, you know what to approach, what to pull back. Because sometimes you may need to pull back your workload.
Yes.
Sometimes you may need to, if it's with clients that you're experiencing, and this is something that we found out therapeutically for us as therapists, there are certain people that you do not schedule or you do not see back to back.
Yes. So true.
because you are aware of the level of trauma that you're working with them and their experience. So you don't see them back to back. You don't mm-hmm. schedule them this maybe the same day. So mm-hmm. it's those type of principles that you have to have as well. So taking and assessing your workload and how mm-hmm. you are approaching the individuals that you are helping, because it could be that you may need to reassess and to reschedule some things. And I want to say this is the most important thing. You always include some self-care. So find a way to care for you. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't need it. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's no more than just sitting on your porch, not answering your phone, you know, yeah. just looking out, you know, into the sun, you know, into your environment, and just enjoying that time, you know, maybe put some jazz on, you know, some whatever you, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you want to put on, you know, praise and worship, whatever it is, and just enjoying that moment. If it's going and treating yourself to something, do it. But you have to put that into practice, because if you don't, that's where you end up in the compassion fatigue. And the compassion fatigue, like I said again, that's the emotional burnout, but it leads to that physical burnout. And when you have a physical burnout, it takes you much longer to recover, because the body itself has to recover as well. So I hope that answered, you know, that question. Yeah.
Yes, it definitely does. It definitely
awesome,
does.
Awesome.
Can you tell our listeners how they can contact you if they wanted to reach out to you and have further questions or dialogue, or how can they reach you?
They can reach me right now. I'm working on my website, so it's not up yet, but I have an email address.
Okay.
And it's Tohi, T-O-H-I, Essentials.
T-O-H-I.
Essentials.
Uh-huh.
At gmail.com.
Okay. All right. I'm going to make sure that we get this here so that we can scroll that down there at the bottom. Okay. So this has been such an honor. I've enjoyed our conversation and our dialogue today. I am so appreciative just of you accepting the invitation to come on and just for coming to share, you know, with Holistic Life Podcast, you know, just the work that you are doing and continuing to do. Again, we do give you congratulations for your doctorate. What a journey it has been for you. It is definitely to be celebrated. It is to be appreciated because we need more voices like you, especially from a Christian perspective, who brings that perspective in, sharing just what in this area of trauma. Mental health, it is just so very important, and it's going to continue to be important, I believe, to grow as more people become more accepting of just understanding about mental health and the journey and how we transform our trauma. And so thank you so much for being with us on today here at Holistic Life Podcast. I'm going to pull you into the backstage and I'm going to come back and have a conversation with you after I end it.
Sure. Thank you for having me. It was a blessing.
Welcome. You are so welcome. Well, I hope this has been a blessing to you all. It certainly was a blessing to me. And I look forward to having Dr. Tawana come back. I would love to do a panel discussion with some of those people that are in my sphere of influence, so that we can continue to have these conversations and these dialogues. Again, I am Shelby Frederick, and you can reach Dr. Dwayne here at her email address here on the screen. But I am getting ready to sign off. Thank you so much for tuning in to this Holistic Life Podcast. We are looking forward to coming back with some more guest interviews and just some things that I will be bringing and presenting. But we are going to catch you on the airwaves the next time that we come through. God bless you all.